Chapter 7. There are no wolves on Fenris. Annaman had heard that before. A nugget of scandalous rumour passed down from nameless source to nameless source. Such contention was, of course, ridiculous. The evidence padded alongside the Thousand Suns as they marched into the mountain once again. A score of iron-furred wolves roaming at will along the length of the column of warriors, like herding dogs watching over a flock. 600 Astartes marched into the mountain, the Thousand Suns and Space Wolves together. At the head of the column, Magnus the Red led the way, surrounded by terminators of the Scarab occult and flanked by his captains. Lord Skarsen and his retinue of Wolfguard marched alongside the towering Primarch. Othir Weirdmake walked at his master's side, and the rune priest inclined his head as he caught Araman's eye. They had spoken last night, yet Araman still did not know quite what to make of him. Land raiders crunched their way uphill alongside the Astartes, the war footing at the behest of Yatiri. The tribal elder had come down from the mountain with Kalophis prior to the arrival of Lord Skarsen and begged to see the Crimson King. The Space Wolves were en route, and he had been forced to wait until after their arrival. As important as the Ogoru were to the Thousand Suns, mortal business took second place to the Astartes' business. Araman had watched as Yatiri was shown into the glittering pyramid of Magnus, seeing the fear in his body language. Like all the masked tribesfolk of the Ogoru, Yatiri cast no shadow in the ether, his life energy somehow hidden from the sight of the Thousand Suns. He came with his fellow elders, and Araman saw their anger, no matter that they were masked and unreadable. Whatever passed between Yatiri and Magnus had been serious enough for the Primarch to order Araman to gather warriors from every fellowship and assemble a battle march. Seeing the Thousand Suns' preparations, a warrior calling himself Varangar Ragnulf Ragnulfsson, herald of Lord Skarsen, had come to Magnus to request an audience. And so the Space Wolves marched with the Thousand Suns. They had marched past the dead stones, the rocks streaked with oily black tendrils like rotten veins. Upon seeing the condition of the dead stones, the Ogoru dropped to their knees and wept in fear. Araman paused to examine the stones, knowing only one thing that could have had so dramatic an effect on such impervious stone. "What do you think?" asked Phocis Takar. "The same as you," he had replied, and walked on. Araman watched the warriors of Lord Skarsen as the march continued. They set a brutal pace, and the Thousand Suns matched it. What was a fast walk for the Astartes was a punishing run for the Ogoru. Despite that, the tribesmen kept pace with the armoured warriors, fear lending their limbs strength to endure the exhausting temperature of the day. "They don't feel the heat," said Phocis Takar as the march continued. "Who?" "The beast Skarsen brought with him," clarified Takar. "They come from a world of ice and snow, yet they seem untroubled by this heat." Araman watched as a wolf that reached to his waist padded by. Its fur was a patchwork of grey and white, thick and shaggy around its four quarters, sleek and smooth at its rear. As though sensing his scrutiny, it swung towards him, baring its fangs and narrowing its yellow eyes in a blatant challenge. "I do not know for sure," said Araman, "but all that lives on the surface of Fenris does so because it can adapt to changing circumstances. These wolves are no exception." "Then I wish I could adapt like them. I'm sick of this damned heat," said Phocis Takar angrily. "My body is gene-wrought to withstand all extremes, but the fire of this sun saps us all of life. Even Hathor Mart struggles with it."
"Speak for yourself, Takar," retorted Hathor Mart.
"I am quite comfortable." Despite his bluster, Mart suffered as the rest of them did. Without the powers of the Pavoni to call on, he was unable to regulate his body as efficiently as would normally be the case. Yet the wolves of Fenris marched as though through a balmy summer's day, the heat as untroubling to them as the frozen tundra of their home world.
"It is thanks to their engineering," said Magnus, joining their conversation.
The Primarch had said nothing since the march had begun, content to let his captains do the talking.
"They were engineered?" asked Araman. "By whom?"
"By the first colonists of Fenris," said Magnus with a smile. "Can't you see the dance of Helices within them? The ballet of genes and the remarkable feats of splicing the earliest scientists achieved?"
Araman shared a glance with his fellow captains
and Magnus laughed.
"No, of course you do not," said Magnus, shaking his head. "Uthizar, you have travelled to Fenris, have you not?"
It was a rhetorical question, for Magnus knew everything about their secondments and legacies of honour. Uthizar nodded. "Briefly, my lord," he said, "it was not a pleasant experience."
"I imagine it was not. Fenris does not welcome visitors, nor is it a gracious host," said Magnus with a hidden smile. "It is a world like no other, unforgiving and pernicious. The ice waits to kill those who travel its frozen seas and snow-locked cliffs at the first signs of complacency. A mortal man, even a well-prepared one, would freeze to death on Fenris within minutes of setting foot on its surface."
"Yet the tribes survive there well enough," said Araman. "Apparently they are little more than feral savages, endlessly waging war for the few scraps of land that survive the upheaval of the great year."
"That they are," said Magnus, "but also so much more."
"What makes them so special?" asked Hathor Mart, unwilling to believe that such barbarous mortals could earn the Primarch's approbation.
"Were you not listening? Fenris is a death world, a planet so hostile it would test even your powers of biomanipulation. Yet these mortals carve themselves land, home and families on a world most right-thinking men would avoid."
"So how do they do it?" Magnus smiled, and Araman saw he was enjoying the role of teacher once more.
"First, tell me what you know of the Canis Helix."
"It's a generic primer," said Hathor Mart, "a precursor gene that allows the remainder of the Space Wolf gene seed to take root in an aspirant's body."
Magnus shook his head. His great eye glittered with green and gold as he regarded his captains. "That is part of its function, yes, but it was never intended to be used so obviously," he said.
"Then how was it supposed to be used?" asked Araman. He looked over at Skarsen, the warrior once more wearing his leather mask, and wondered if the apothecaries of the Fang knew as much as Magnus. The Wolf Lord walked warily around Magnus, having tasted a measure of his power. Araman suspected his Primarch's boast that he could destroy the Space Wolf ships in orbit was a calculated bluff. Clearly, Skarsen wasn't so sure.
"Imagine the time when mankind first discovered Fenris," continued Magnus. "A world so utterly inimical to life that humans simply could not survive. Everything about Fenris was death, from the blood freezing cold to the sinking lands, to the howling winds that suck the life from your lungs. Back then, of course, geneticists saw impossibility as a challenge and daily wrought new codes within the chromosomes of human and animal genomes as easily as the mechanicum punched data wafers for servitors."
"So you're saying that these colonists brought gene-bred wolves with them to Fenris?" said Phocis Tikar.
"Perhaps they did," allowed Magnus. "But more likely they adapted imperfectly at times and without thought to the consequences. Or perhaps there were other, older races living on Fenris."
Araman watched Magnus as he spoke, feeling that there was more to the origins of Fenris than he was telling. Magnus was a traveller who had ventured deeper into the hidden reaches of the great ocean than any living soul. Perhaps he had actually witnessed the earliest days of the Wolf King's world. Magnus gave a studied shrug and said,
"You look at those beasts and you see wolves, but is that only because it is what you expect to see?"
"What else would we see?" asked Hathor Mart. "They are wolves.
When you have travelled as far as I have, and seen as I have seen, you will learn that it is possible to look beyond the expected and into the true heart of a thing."
Magnus gestured towards a wolf loping alongside the column, its powerful muscles driving it uphill through the heat without pause.
"I can look past the flesh and muscle of that beast, paring back the bone into the heart of its marrow to read every scar and twist in its genetic code. I can unravel the millennia of change back to the logos of its origins," said Magnus.
Araman was surprised to hear sadness in his voice, as though he had seen things he would rather not have seen.
"The thing it is, what it wished to be, and all the stages of that long evolutionary road."
The wolf stopped beside Magnus, and he nodded towards it. An unspoken discourse seemed to pass between them. Araman caught a knowing glance from Uthia Weirdmake. Despite his reservations, he felt the urge to nurture the nascent kinship between them.
"Away with you!" shouted Phocis to Carr, "shooing it. Damn wolves!"
Magnus smiled.
"I told you, there are no wolves on Fenris."
They had met the previous evening, after Ahriman returned to his corporeal body. Opening his eyes, he groaned as his flesh ached with the stress of his body of light's reintegration. His leg flared painfully, his entire body a mass of discomfort. With careful slowness, Ahriman uncrossed his legs and used his Hecker staff to push himself to his feet. His right thigh felt numb, like it belonged to someone else, and cold pain burned the muscles and sinews the length of his leg. He opened his robe gingerly, pressing his fingertips to the bulk musculature of his smooth torso and grimacing in pain. Repercussions covered his flesh where the void hunters had wounded him, blackened patches of skin drained of their vitality. More completely than any wound dealt with blade or bullet, injuries to the subtle body damaged the very essence of a traveller's flesh. And Astartes could rise above pain, his body designed to allow him to function without loss of effectiveness, but nothing save rest and meditation could undo the damage of repercussions. He saw his grimoire lying open on the ground of his pavilion and knelt to retrieve it, wincing as the dead areas of his body pulled tight. He felt like he had fought for a month without rest, his body pushed nearly to the limits of its endurance. Ahriman secreted his grimoire and changed from his robe into a hooded tunic of crimson edged with ivory and sable. Though his body ached for sleep, he had one last meeting to attend, one he had not anticipated until his near-fatal flight into the great ocean. The flap at his pavilion's entrance pushed open, and Sobek entered, his face a mask of concern. Cooler night air gusted in with him.
"My lord, is everything all right?"
"Everything is fine, Sobek," said Ahriman. "I heard you calling out." "An interesting flight in the ether, Sobek, that is all," said Ahriman, lifting the hood over his head. "Some predatory creatures thought to make me a morsel."
"And yet you are venturing out?" asked Sobek. "You should be resting, my lord."
Ahriman shook his head.
"No," he said, "there is someone I need to see."
The lair of the wolves was on the edge of the mountain, in the shadow of the deadstones. Skarsen had set his warriors' shelters in concentric rings, with his at its heart. Ahriman saw a great wolf's skull totem planted in the crystalline hardpan, hung with wolf tails as long as a mortal man's leg and teeth like blades. As he drew near, shadows bled from the twilight, sleek killers that put Ahriman in mind of the predators that had almost ended him earlier. Six of them padded towards him, their forms indistinct against the darkness, their hackles raised. They halted, and he saw the gleam of stars on their fangs. Their muscles were tensed and ready, like pistons ready to fire on the launch rails of an embarkation deck.
"I have come to see Othair Weirdmake," said Ahriman, feeling foolish at addressing beasts.
The largest of the wolves threw back its head and loosed an almighty howl that split the faded evening. Ahriman waited for the wolves to back away, but they remained where they were, barring him entry to their master's domain. He stepped forward, and the wolf that had announced his presence bared its iron fangs with a threatening growl. Another shadow moved behind the wolves, a tall warrior in granite-grey armour who walked with a tall staff topped with an eagle of gold and silver. His beard was waxed, and he wore a plain leather skullcap over his shaven scalp. Ahriman recognised him immediately.
"Othair Weirdmake," he said.
"Aye," replied the space wolf, tilting his head and regarding him carefully. "You are hurt. Mistflesh hurt."
"I was careless," he said, not knowing the word but understanding the meaning. Weirdmake nodded and said,
"That you were. I watched you chase the weird, blind to the hunting packs gathering for the murder make. How came you to miss them?"
"As I said, I was careless," repeated Ahriman.
"How did you find me?"
Weirdmake laughed, the sound rich with genuine humour.
"That took no great skill," he said. "I am a son of the storm, and I know the ocean of souls like the seas around Azaheim. When the wolf's eye swells in the sky, the world forge turns, and the dowsers seek the silent places, those places that are still amid the turmoil. I looked for stillness, and I found you.
Much of what Weird Make said made no sense to Ahriman, the terms too archaic, the vocabulary expressing parochial understandings beyond one not of Fenris. That begs the question, why were you looking for me?
Come, said Weird Make, walk with me.
The rune priest set off towards the dead stones without waiting to see if Ahriman obeyed. The wolves parted to allow him through their ranks, keeping a wary eye on the beasts. Ahriman followed Weird Make towards the dead stones, the menhirs, like black teeth, growing up from the ground. The warrior walked the circumference of the stones, careful not to touch them as he passed. He turned as Ahriman approached.
Anchors in the world, said Weird Make. Places of stillness. The storm rages across this world, but all is still here, like Azaheim, immovable and unchanging.
The Agoru call them dead stones, said Ahriman, as the wolves padded softly around the edge of the circle, each one with its eyes locked on him.
A fitting name.
So, are you going to tell me why you were looking for me?
To know you, said Weird Make. Amlodi came with a summons for your master, but I came for you. Your name is known to the rune priests of the Space Wolves, Azek Ahriman. You are star cunning. Like me, you are a son of the storm, and I know of your affinity with the weird.
The weird? I don't know that term, said Ahriman.
You are not of Fenris, said Weird Make, as though that explained everything.
Then enlighten me, said Ahriman, losing patience.
You would have me share the secrets of my calling.
We will have precious little else to talk about if you do not. Weird Make smiled, exposing teeth honed to sharp points.
You cut to the heart of the meat, friend. Very well. At its simplest, weird is fate, destiny.
The future, said Ahriman.
At times, agreed Weird Make. On Fenris, we ken it as the turning of the world forge that continually reshapes the face of the land. As one land rises, another sinks to its doom. Weird shows us how past and present shape the future, but also how the future affects the past. The storms of time flow, weave together and burst apart, forever entwined within the great saga of the universe.
Ahriman began to understand the words of the rune priest, hearing in them a debased echo of the teachings of the Corvidae.
Fate goes ever as she shall, quoted Ahriman, and Weird Make laughed.
Aye, she does, indeed. The Geatlander knew his business when he said that line.
Ahriman looked up at the mountain, feeling his hostility to Weird Make easing in the face of their shared understanding of the mysteries. As different as his teachings were, the Space Wolf had an insight Ahriman found refreshing. That didn't mean he trusted him, not by a long way, but it was a start.
"So, you have found me," he said. "What do you intend now?"
"You and I are brothers of the storm," said Weird Make, echoing Ahriman's earlier thought. "Brothers should not be strangers. I know the saga of your legion's past, and I know that nothing gets men's murder urge pumping like fear of what they do not understand."
Ahriman hesitated before asking, "What is it you think you know?"
Weird Make stepped towards him, saying, I know that a flaw in your heritage almost destroyed your legion, and that you have a terror of its return. I know for my legion is the same. The curse of the wolf and haunts us, and we keep watch over our brothers for wolf sign.
Weird Make reached up to touch the silver oak leaf worked into Ahriman's shoulder guard.
Just as you watch your fellow legionaries for the flesh change.
Ahriman flinched as though struck, backing away from Weird Make.
Never touch that again, he said, fighting to keep his voice even.
Ormuzd, asked Weird Make. That was his name, was it not?
Ahriman wanted to be angry, wanted to lash out at this unwarranted picking of an old wound. He forced his mind into the lower enumerations, casting off the shed skin of grief and regret.
Yes, he said at last, that was his name. That was my twin brother's name.
Ahriman felt the sickness from the valley long before they crossed the ridge where he had first seen its titanic guardians. Only when he felt the bitter metallic taste in the back of his throat did he realise that he could feel the ripple of etheric energies along his limbs. It was faint, barely more than a whisper, but it was there. How was that possible when it had been so conspicuously absent before? As the ridge of the valley came into sight, he felt that sickness more strongly, like the taste of wind blowing over a mass grave. Something foul had taken root in the valley. Adaman looked over at Magnus, seeing his enormous form as a haze of indistinct images, like a thousand pick negatives placed on top of one another. Magnus the giant, Magnus the man, Magnus the monster. A thousand permutations on the theme of Magnus. He blinked away the after-images, feeling sick at the sight of them. The sensation was unknown to him, and he shook off his momentary dizziness. "You feel it too, don't you?" asked Phocis Takar.
"I do," he said. "What is happening?"
"The sleepers are waking," hissed Uthisar, one hand pressed to his temple.
"Sleepers?" asked Hathor Mart. "What are you talking about?"
"The sleeping souls bound to crystal immortality, left behind to watch," gasped Uthisar. "Trapped and corrupted, dragged to a slow doom that is worse than death."
"What in the Emperor's name is he talking about?" demanded Kalophis.
"The Ogoru call them Dizathai," said Magnus. "Void beasts given form by the nightmares of mortals since the dawn of time. Men, in their ignorance, call them demons."
Anaman almost smiled at demons indeed.
"You will feel the call of the great ocean, my sons," said Magnus, his eye red and angry. "It will be strong, but rise to the ninth enumeration. Enter the sphere of inner determination and close your minds off from its power, for it will call you like nothing you have ever known."
"My lord," asked Adaman, "what is going on?"
"Do it, Azek," snapped Magnus. "This is not power as you know it. It is stagnant and dead. It will try to force its way into your mind, but you must not let it, not for a moment."
It felt alien to Adaman to close himself off from the power of ether, but he did as his Primarch ordered, focusing his will and lifting his consciousness to the essence of his higher self, where he became an observer in his own flesh. Magnus set off toward the mouth of the valley without another word, almost outpacing them. The tempo of the march picked up, and Adaman saw confusion in the space wolves at this sudden urgency. But the wolves, they understood. Othair Weirdmake spoke to Amlodi Skarsen, and the masked warrior cast a furious glare towards Magnus the Red. In his objective state of being, he saw the familiar fear of the unknown, the hatred engendered by the strange and unfamiliar. The Space Wolves did not trust his legion, but perhaps the tentatively established cooperation of Othair Weirdmake might change that. The valley climbed towards the ridge, and Adaman noticed a change in the very character of the landscape. The perfection he had seen in its flawless geometries had subtly altered, as though the world had been shifted a fraction of a degree. Angles that once complemented one another were now horribly dissonant, like a musical instrument a hair's breadth out of tune. Golden ratios were upset, and the graceful dance of intersecting lines became a tangle of discordant shapes that violated the perfect order that had existed before. The valley was a place of threat, its every angle hostile. The throaty rumbles of the land raiders' engines echoed strangely from the valley sides, thrown back as if from 100 different sources. At last they came to the mouth of the valley, and Ahriman stared in detached horror at what had become of its mighty guardians.
"I can hear them screaming," hissed Uthisar, and Ahriman saw why that should be so.
The titanic construct stood as they always had, towering and immense, but the smooth, clean lines of their limbs were no longer graceful and pristine. Once they had been the colour of sun-bleached bone, but a loathsome network of poisonous greenish-black veins threaded their limbs, a necrotic plague that poured from the cave in thick, oily ropes and filled the colossal statues with sickness. Their splay-clawed feet were rank with the stuff, like rotted vegetable matter that heaved and writhed with foul growth. Blackened legs supported torsos webbed with thin lines of dark matter that absorbed any light that fell upon it. Their slender arms were slick with black veins, polluted conduits carrying the foulness of some nameless corruption. The graceful curve of their enormous heads remained pale and untouched, but even as Araman watched, the questing black tendrils oozed around the huge gems set in the surfaces. Araman felt the insistent pressure of their great ocean breaking against his barriers of self-control. There was power here, rising up from somewhere far below. Yet what he felt was a fraction of what lay beneath, the trickle that becomes the stream that becomes the torrent. A dam had cracked, and inexorable pressure would soon break it wide open. He ached to taste that power, to feel it flowing through his body, but he kept it shut out as Magnus had ordered, forcing his gaze away from the great statues. "What's happening to them?" he asked. Magnus looked down at him.
"Something evil, Azek," he said. "Something I fear my presence on this world may have hastened. A balance has been upset, and I must restore it."
Yattery and his tribal elders, men who had managed to keep pace with the Astartes, despite their advanced years, finally reached the edge of the valley.
"Dizathai!" he cried, holding his phalarica in a tight, white-knuckled grip. "They return!"
"What in the name of the Wolfsai is he talking about?" demanded Skarsen, marching over with Othar Weirdmake. "What are these things?"
Magnus glared at the Wolf Lord, and Araman saw his Primarch's frustration at having a brother Legion's warriors present. What needed to be done here was best done hidden from inquisitive eyes. Yattery turned to Magnus and said,
"They crave the dead. We must give them what they desire."
"No," said Magnus. "That is the last thing you should do."
Yattery shook his head, and Araman saw his anger.
"This is our world," he said, "and we will save it from the Dysathai, not you."
The Metamasked Elder turned from the Primarch and led his tribesmen into the valley, making his way towards the altar before the cave mouth.
"Lord Magnus," pressed Skarsen, "what does he mean?"
"Superstition, Lord Skarsen," said Magnus. "Nothing more."
"That looks like a damn sight more than superstition," said Skarsen, gripping his bolter tight to his chest. "Speak true now, Magnus of the Thousand Suns. What is going on here?"
"Hell," said Othar Weirdmake, staring at the titanic constructs with a mixture of horror and fascination.
"The Father Kraken of the Deep, the Keeper of the Dead."
"This is what keeps you from the Wolf King's side," cried Skarsen, "consorting with sorcerers."
Magnus rounded on the space wolf. "Did you not learn your lesson before, whelp?" he said.
Skarsen recoiled at Magnus's anger, and Araman felt the wash of his fury as it spread like the shock waves of an explosion. Deeper in the valley, Yattery and his tribesmen surrounded the altar, chanting a mantra of supplication to non-existent gods. They stood in pairs, facing one another. Araman watched Yattery lift his phalarica and knew what would happen the instant before it was too late to prevent it.
"No!" cried Magnus, seeing what Araman saw. "Stop!"
Yattery turned to the tribesman next to him and rammed his phalarica through his chest. His fellow elders stepped together, one man the victim, the other his killer. Spears flashed, blades bit flesh and bone, blood was spilled. Araman would never know for sure whether it was the death of the tribesman, the blood splashing the altar, or some unknown catalyst. But no sooner had the dead men fallen than the power building in the valley surged like a tidal flood. The dam holding it back had no chance of stopping it. With a titanic rumble of cracking stone, the guardians of the valley began to move.